You're listening to the BBS Radio Network, and this is Between Two Worlds with Derek White Sky Cloud, healer, author, shaman, paranormal investigator. Stay tuned. Up next is Between Two Worlds with Derek White Sky Cloud.
Hello everyone, this is Derek White Sky Cloud, your favorite friendly neighborhood psychic medium and paranormal investigator. You listen to Between Two Worlds on bbsradio.com. As you all know, we actually syndicate it all across the world. Actually, we do have some people are picking us up as well. We have Australia, the program called Underworld. We'd like to thank Lee Ramsey for picking us up on the other side of the down under. We also have Goy Began, which also is related to the Netherlands. They're picking us up as well. We'd like to thank them for picking us up in that area. Tonight, folks, we got some great things happening, and huge amount. This is one of the most interesting team that I've actually had heard about. I got a lot of friends of mine that are in the paranormal psychic, or not psychic team, but in the paranormal investigation team that have been talking about. You got to see these guys work. You got to see what they're doing. This is absolutely interesting video. What they have done, they are promoting one of the most scariest paranormal investigations in Kentucky. We have one of the team members who's actually involved with this program. He's a producer and director. His name is Chris Booth. This place is actually called Waverly Hill Sanatorium, and that actually is in Kentucky. And there's approximately about 65,000 people who died in this hospital. And I'm going to get Chris to share with everyone regarding what this whole thing is about, why they decided to do it, and have they really did, or did they really find what they felt was considered one of the most haunting or most, I guess you call it, we call it the scariest program ever. And also, Chris, are you there?
I'm here.
Welcome, Chris, to the show, to Between Two Worlds. And I have been watching, I've been hearing so much about you. You and you have a brother, right?
Yeah, twin brother.
Okay, so I've been hearing about both you. So both your brothers are actually in the same team, doing the same kind of work?
Well, Phil does more of the film part of video, and I do more of the producing and the audio side of it. But we both pretty much do the, you know, put our heads together and put out a, you know, incredible epic reality production, I guess, is what we do.
Excellent. So basically, were you on the site yourself? Did you just start from the beginning to the end, or were you pulled in to participate after? Or?
Which, the Waverly Hills Project?
Waverly Hills Project, yeah.
we actually started right from the beginning. It started, it seems a long time ago, but...
How long ago, like
a year ago? 2003. It started
2003, and took you 4 years to get this whole thing together?
No. It started in 2003, and what had happened is we had went down there looking for places to film. We make horror films for Sony Pictures.
Okay.
And we came across a place, and one of the producers wanted to write some kind of a pirate action movie about whatever, and he wanted to film it in his sanatorium. And so we started checking it out. And I started reading the legends and the stories and the sightings and everything that was supposed to be happening in Waverly Hills Sanatorium. And I thought, well, there's your story. We changed the script. We changed whatever we were working on and made a movie about it. That was Death Tunnel. And then while we were shooting Death Tunnel, we kept running into the real people that used to be in the sanatorium, the patients, the staff, the ghost hunters that had, you know, spent 5 years doing at the LGHS. As well as Taps, everybody. And then we said, this is a great documentary. You know, obviously a horror movie is a horror movie.
Yeah.
A documentary is a documentary. And we didn't want to put some of the touching stuff that we had found out in a horror movie because it would be somewhat disrespectful to the patients.
Yeah.
So we made that the movie. And then we turned what you have seen, Spooked, the Ghost of Waverly Hills Sanatorium, into a documentary. And, of course, Sci-Fi Channel, went ape about it, said, gotta have it, sold it in 5 minutes. They put it all over the air, and the rest is history. And we were there from beginning to end, so it actually took us about 2 years to do.
Wow. Dan, I was going to ask you a question now. Did you ever have Frank Zappas on your team to be involved in this too? Or
who?
Frank Zappas?
John Zappas?
Sorry, John Zappas.
John Zappas is a demonologist. He's actually in the second of our documents, Children of the Grave.
Okay.
He's in Children of the Grave. John Zappas was not on the first one. Though it would have been great to have him there, but he wasn't on that one.
Now, how many, I've actually seen so many different programs, or actually there's about three or four that you divided up in the investigation. Is one Children of the Grave different from another location, or is this all the same place?
Well, Children of the Grave is our latest document, which was released on October 15th.
Okay.
And what it started is a 10-day investigation, started from Arkansas in the United States to Missouri to Illinois to Ohio to Kentucky to Indianapolis.
Wow.
And what it was basically, it was into search of child spirits and to understand why they still haunted. And if they actually was learning anything and growing as a child being caught in limbo, and we were just fascinated about it. And, of course, where better to start than the orphanages? And it all started, our story starts in around late 1800s, about 1901 is where our story starts about orphanages and how the haunting starts in orphanages and what had happened to these children before welfare came into place. Of course, that led us to haunted orphanages, haunted woods, where there were legends of children running around made of ash and cinder, on fire, screaming, being burned down, all kinds of freaky stuff. And then the whole story just built on that point, and we went down and we caught some amazing evidence. And that became Children of the Grave.
Did they find any records? Did you guys find any records regarding how many children that had died there or how many children that actually...
Well, it's just a complicated story, to be really honest with you. It starts out... there's a very thorough history of orphanages, mostly the abuse that had went into them and the mistreatment. And how it started, really, we were doing a convention down in Kentucky promoting Spooked, and I was ready to leave back to L.A., and we got a call from an investigator, a reporter, Mary Ellen Hammack, a reporter, Paranormal reporter. She just uncovered a story. She had found 699 children buried in an unmarked grave.
Oh.
And so immediately we jumped in the car from Kentucky and we made it up into Indianapolis and Indiana within hours. And we unloaded our cameras and we started filming and telling the story on that grave site. And that's where Children of the Grave starts out. And basically 300 of them were poisoned from formaldehyde in the milk that they were given at the orphanage. And the bodies were dumped. Erased, history was erased, the orphanage was pulled down. Not saying they did it on purpose, they just made the milk, tried to make the milk last longer, but end up killing the children.
Well, and formaldehyde, actually, if you're talking to someone who actually used to be a retired dairy farmer when I was young, some people use Jivex bleach or formaldehyde to basically sweeten the milk as well.
Yes, and to make it last longer.
Make it last longer, yeah.
Yeah, and they put too much of it in. And it killed the children, and that's where all the horror started. And then somehow, 699 bodies were found accidentally when they were trying to find more room in the cemetery to put more people, to make more money, obviously.
Out of the 300, was there any source, or do you feel there was actually any source of betrayal of seeing of some children being killed, or was that actually with the most accident?
I'm not one to start rumors, but I know of a lot of stuff that would point that direction and stuff that we do unveil in Children of the Grave and some stuff we don't touch because of a lot of innocent people that probably would get hurt that had nothing to do with it being that was then and this is now.
Yeah.
But yes, there is. There is a lot of, there is still today, a lot of work farms, slavery, sexual abuse, molestation, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
On children, because they're smaller than you, so they can get away with it. And that's exactly what they did. And unfortunately, there was a lot of orphans that were glad to be in an orphanage because they had nowhere else to go, and the government, they knocked on your door and took your children away. And so, we go on both sides of the coin in the documentary, but basically we touch the abuse because the abuse and the ones that died obviously before the time, is the feeling is the one we focused on that would be haunting the areas.
Yeah.
Why they'd still be lingering.
Now, that was around 1900s when this whole thing happened.
Welfare came in around 1930, and then obviously the orphanages all were erased and turned into, you know, old people's homes, sanitariums, when TB was strong and all that kind of stuff. And then eventually when the government, you know, couldn't keep, you know, there was no really need or financially they could keep them open, they had to find a way that the history could start getting out of what had happened in the early years in these places. So what they did is they pulled them down, and they erased the files, erased the building, and they figured that would erase the children.
And apparently it, not, did it?
It didn't.
No.
And it won't, because it haunts you forever, and that's what basically the story is about.
Yeah, the history catches up to you.
Yes, it does.
Now, when you mentioned the word TB, did that ever happen as well in that location, or was this another location on another program?
Well, tuberculosis was the main focus, or the only focus, really, in the Waverly Hills Sanatorium, them trying to find a desperation to find a cure for that disease. And, of course, that was a horrible disease as well, the scarlet fever, the plague, and everything else, diphtheria, everything that had happened down at that point in time. TB really pointed out in the Waverly Hills story, spooked the ghost of Waverly Hills Sanatorium, focused on TB. This one focuses on mostly abuse. Though there is reports of a lot of children dying in one of the woods that we had investigated from diphtheria, a big camp of them.
Okay.
Was a concept that they might think would be haunting the area, though we didn't really find any proof of that disease, but there was this historian saying that did happen a lot in Missouri.
Did you find any marked graves or unmarked graves in some of the areas that look like they're grave sites?
Well, we found a lot of interesting stuff. We had gone to a place called Bond State Asylum. I don't know if you know of that. That's in Peoria, Illinois, in the United States. And that place is pretty creepy. It's one of the last places they have pulled down, and it was an insane asylum in 1878. And it went through, I think the last time they used it was in 1973. And they basically closed it like they closed them all because of mistreatment, the abuse patients were receiving. Of course, every hospital, state hospital, asylum has their own cemetery, whether they know people know that or not. They have their own cemetery to put the bodies.
Yeah.
And we found the cemetery. Of course, it's all closed up, and they don't let you into it for whatever reason. I don't know why, but we found it. We filmed it, and it's incredible because what it is, it's thousands of little graves that are handmade, made out of stone. And they're really tiny little graves, like children-looking graves. And
yeah.
They're all made of little stone, and on them is only numbers. There's no names or anything. They're just numbers, possibly numbers of people, inmates, you know, who of the asylum only had a number, not a name. And walking through that and filming, that was absolutely incredible. It was so scary and just so sad. And then walking to the end of it, where the water had deteriorated the mountain, all the gravestones were toppled into a big sewer pit. And on top of that, I guess some of the locals had thrown toilets and tires or whatever else you wanted to junk away on top of the gravestones, which I would imagine the bodies would be there as well. And it was just very sad, and the state of Illinois did not fix it up, did not take care of it. And we tried to find out who these people are, and you couldn't even get the identities, even under a court order from the state of Illinois. They will not release any information.
Now, when you were on location, I want to ask about your feelings when you were walking around. Did it ever affect you, even from the loss of the children? Did it ever your emotions? Did it ever affect you at all while you were on site?
It did, but I'm kind of being I'm a musician by trade, and then a filmmaker after that. So I'm always very sensitive, really, to that stuff anyway. So I remember when I was in Waverly, I had felt a terrible, I guess the word would be vibe, when I was inside the death tunnel. And upon that, I had taken a photograph and also had a digital recorder. Of course, if you have a digital recorder and you record something, an EVP, and if you have a camera and you take a picture, and then you know that you had a gut feeling that there was something there, you pretty much have a ghost. Because you've got three senses telling you it's all there. And then you got the two proofs of obviously the camera and the audio recorder. And I had caught a little girl, ghost inside the death tunnel in the Waverly Hills. That's where it all started for me, as being very on the edge and realizing there was its truth to, you know, ghosts being there. In this new one, it was just coming back from Bond State was very creepy because I felt like I had carried something with me. And something had followed me because we were actually on our way to a seeker. We had done a story about the first documented possession in America in 1877, the Waseca Wonder story. And we had went to the houses and filmed and actually did investigations of the houses that the two possessions had taken place.
Yeah.
It's about a 13-year-old girl that gets possessed by an 18-year-old girl plus four of the spirits from the dead. And it's a true story. It's a true. It's in all the psychological journals and spiritual magazines, all that stuff. It's a very true story. And we went down and documented that. And, of course, coming from Bond State, going right to basically the exorcist house, it was too trippy. It was too hard to deal with.
Do you feel like you brought someone home with you?
I brought something from the graveyard, because when I got to the hotel, I just felt like really disorientated, and I couldn't find anything. I couldn't find my keys. I couldn't get out of the hotel room. I couldn't get to my meeting. I couldn't do anything. All I could think about was these thousands of graves and how sad it is, and why won't anybody do anything about it? And it became an obsession for Philip and I. And then so we just made
sure. Did you ever get someone who follows the holy traditional way to help cleanse that location?
We're not really. I mean, we have a lot of sensitives on this show, this new show, and they help us understand. And I think what we do is that we just say, listen, we're only here so that you're not forgotten. I believe that nobody wants to be forgotten the way we look at it.
Or even by yourself, by the way, because you're bringing back that spirit with you. Did you actually get some help to help you?
No, not really. I believe that if it was with me, it's because it needs to be. And I believe that I helped it that way. I don't believe that I picked it up accidentally, because I believe a lot of the spirits that we deal with are not evil entities, but are very positive ones. And I believe all they want to do is be remembered, and the story needs to be told. And once the story is told, it helps them break.
Yes.
That's what I believe anyway. Because, I mean, there was an interesting story that just happened. Is we were investigating a place called the Gore Orphanage, which is in Ohio, which is a legend about an orphanage that burned down. And it was like hundreds of children in the woods and all kinds of, you know, stories like that. We hadn't been able to find too much on it, and because there's not much left of the orphanage but a bunch of rocks. And, you know, the pillars from that time, we found out there was a spiritist that had tried to bring their children back. He had lost all his children in a week from diphtheria. And he was playing with God, basically, or the other side, trying to bring them back. So I believe a lot of the vibes that we had picked up on some of these investigations were not necessarily the children that we were looking for, but were actually what they had brought back into the world. The spirituals had brought back the wrong things. And so we tried to stay clear of that stuff, but meanwhile, we were looking for evidence, and all I got was an interesting thing. It's on eBay. I had bought a haunted prosthetic limb from 1903 that was found on Gore Orphanage Road. And it belonged to a 5-year-old child. And I just couldn't believe that something like this would be on eBay when I'm doing research on the subject matter and not being able to find anything. And something right in front of me, there was this artificial limb from the, you know, late 1800s. It's very old. And I had to get it. I mean, not to, exploit it. I just had to get it because it needed to be here. This is what we're doing. And we can take it back. You know, these people without selling it, they just want to make money. They want to joke about it, whatever. Who knows? It could not even be real. But all I know is that we got to get it. So I got it. 3 days later, it arrived in UPS. I opened the box. It's an arm. It's a prosthetic arm from the 18th century. It's truly old. It has a hook on the hand, like a pipe.
Is this the one that's on the photograph in the box?
That's the one in the box. Yeah, that's real.
Wow.
That is real. And I got it to our studio, and what happened is it came with a book. The book was found inside the book, and the arm was found in a trunk. And he sold it together, and that was a good thing because I felt that as long as they never separated, we'd be okay. There's some reason why that book means something to that arm. Well, to this day, I have that book and that arm, and I don't separate it. But inside the book, it's an old book, the 18th century book. It's not a reprint. It's the original book. It completely is falling apart. You could blow it, and it would blow in the dust. It's so old. But inside it is little, like, bookmarkers made of leaf, of children's ribbons, and baby hair. It's a book about how to deal with your children when they die. It's a sad book. It was written by a minister, and it's a book about how to deal with death of your children. And it's overwhelming, but inside it there are different baby hair, you know, like a little brunette baby hair and a blonde baby hair. And I'm freaking out now, you know. This guy didn't even know that. He didn't even open the book. And I went, oh, my God, you know. So now I have this book, and I have this arm. Because this guy's going on and on saying, this arm is going to crawl out and scratch you, and it's going to scratch at your door at night. You know, I'd keep it in my vault because I heard it scratching. And I said, that makes a good story, but I don't believe that, okay? And it doesn't scratch, and it doesn't make noise. But I do keep the book and the arm together.
Yeah.
And that is a beautiful, as soon as I know who it belongs to, I want to take it to them, their family, whoever. I'm still researching where it came from, who made it, all that stuff. But it's an incredible find. That's an incredible find.
Well, the interesting part, I would say that item was supposed to find you so that you can actually help that family through or help that spirit, that child through, and probably help other young children.
I hope so, and I'd love to share that more with you later down the line, and maybe you could try to help or give me some guidance on that one, to be honest with you. It's a whole new ball of wax. It's a fascinating book. It's a beautiful book.
Yeah.
The poetry is just absolutely gorgeous about how to deal. It's a mother talking to the children that are dying, or talking to the family members of how to deal with this. And every poem is very sad and very poetic. And it's very a touching book. I think we'd like try to make a show on it or something, maybe at a point in time. But meanwhile, we're still going to take it back to Ohio and see what we can find out about it.
Do you know if that little girl had passed with leukemia? Is there anything in there?
I haven't been able to find anything. Losing a limb of an arm, I don't know what that would mean. You know, it definitely belongs to a child. I could not tell if the hair is of a girl or of a boy.
Yeah.
There are some pictures of a girl. Photographs of the drawings. Drawings of a girl that is like praying, and then there's some of a little baby. But I noticed in one of the poetry talks about a baby dying.
I've got a funny feeling this child actually passed through leukemia and not the idea of losing one's arm. I think the person had lost their arm a long time ago, and that's all the mother had left was that item.
Wow.
To remember her by.
Yes.
But I feel there's leukemia connected. I feel like this child was actually dying through a viral infection.
You might be right, and you just gave me chills. So when usually when I get the chills, I think you're onto it. I think you're right.
If you're wrong, if you walk with me, if I walk with you on site, I can pretty well tell you exactly what happened to that person that passed away.
Yeah, well, that would be fascinating to do because I really want this arm to be treated right. I know that it's on our front cover on the show because people might think it's exploitation and give it to take. It may appear that way. But the way I look at it is I don't believe something is in your course without you trying to show it. A lot of people just brush it under the rug. You don't get a job done by brushing stuff under the rug. Let everybody see it. Let them make their own judgment, because you know what you do when you get judged anyway. But the thing is, let them make their own judgment, because how we feel is that we tell the stories, and the stories get set free, and it mixes the air all up, and it brings back hopefully the right medicine that we're all looking for.
Well, that's exactly right, because basically what you're doing is you're making us go to rest where, again, the attachment to that child or a family member who has lost a loved one, and help them come together again, where it's saying, you know what, you're not alone, mommy and daddy have already passed away, you can go home with your family now. A lot of the children don't know that in spirit. They don't know they can go back to their family or go with their family, and so they feel that they have to be solely connected to the location. Well, that's where a lot of children and even anyone goes through tragedy like this. They feel they need to hang on as long as they can to the location, especially when the parents say, don't leave me, don't leave me. I don't want you to die. I don't want you to leave me. And so the child feels guilty, thinking that they did something wrong. And so they hang around till the parents have passed, and sometimes they don't even know the parents have passed.
Yeah, exactly. They're looking. They're searching.
They're searching for their mother and father, or even searching for someone that's close to them.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think Children of Great Touch is a lot of that. We have a beautiful author, a panel author, Rosemary Ellen Guiley, who does a lot of the instruction on how to, deal with these spirits when you come across them. And she's great, and she's right on, and she's very sensitive about it. And she's so dead on, and she gets to the point, like a child ghost. It will say a child ghost. It's looking for its mother. They come. We've had a lot of children ghosts hang around together like wolves. It develops a pecking order, so to speak, and they become packs, and there's troublemakers in them. There's all kinds of different directions we go in Children of the Grave that explain, what we go through, because when we do go through Children of the Grave, there is one story at the very end. There's these woods that we found in Missouri. There's a place called Zombie Road. Now, my question is, why do you call it Zombie Road? So we start out there with a lot of people telling you why they call it Zombie Road. Basically, we get a photograph sent to us by Missouri Paranormal Research, and it shows a picture of all these children standing in between trees, shadows. Okay, just like 5-year-olds, 7-year-olds, 8-year-olds, shadows all amongst these trees. The photographer claims that when he took that picture, there was nothing there. They send us a picture, and it looks like the most coolest, movie poster you could ever imagine, because it's just these kids' shadows in between the trees, perfectly aligned. I mean, just like, wow, this is a great photograph. Because you know what I think right at the beginning, right? Yeah, right. This is fake. This is false. This is not right. So, very intriguing, though. So, we get a few more pictures and a few different people saying, oh, this is true. This is what I got. And we're like, wow, that's pretty cool. So, we set up an investigation. And actually, that's the end of Children of the Grave. We go from all the way from Arkansas and wrap up actually in Illinois, but we spend some time in Missouri. We go to these woods and we walk 6 miles. Okay, we bring a team, almost like an army. Helicopters land. We go in there and we spend all night with infrareds and thermal images looking for these shadow children. Okay? Looking for these pictures, looking why, trying to find if this is true or this is fake. It's just a good story. We want to tell it. We don't really care if it comes back like, hey, it was a good story, but we didn't find any evidence. Okay? We'll be the first one to say, whatever. It's a story that counts, and it's the sincerity behind it. But the point is, we did find these shadow children, but not in the location that they had taken a photograph, in a different area.
Their location, that's maybe where they've been buried.
I don't know, but we on our film imager, we found all these shadows in between these trees. It's 100% unexplainable. It's a nest.
Well, here's an idea. This is what normally comes across. A lot of times, too, when they do mass graves, and this is how they used to do it here in Canada, they, for like, say, 100 years ago, they would do mass graves or do graves, and then they would plant trees, small trees, near the areas. And as 100 years goes by, or 75 years goes by, there's large trees, and then basically back then, there were not that many headstones. They used to use either sticks or pieces of wood, just like you said, put markers to say that's where that child is, or someone has, that loved one's passed. So it's very possible that those trees have grown where those children may have been buried in that area.
You know, I think you're dead on. And another thought was that, as silly as it sounds, almost like the tree makes a shadow of a child.
Yeah.
Because it's like you could say, okay, you put a flashlight in front of anything, it's going to cast a shadow. But we don't have flashlights down there. We're not using flashlights when we take the photograph. We're using a thermal imager. We're not reflecting heat sources or whatever. We got black shadows with heads on them, every single one. Trees don't have heads on them. They don't have round.
It's not an apple tree. This is your common tree.
No, this is a straight-up tree.
Yeah.
That's totally bare because it's winter. You're talking about an area that was killed by dioxin poisoning, if you remember that, in 1975. Times Beach was wiped out by dioxin poisoning. We're talking like down the Merrimack River here. So it looks like everything is dead. It's disastrous. It's horrible. It's like Adronimus Strain when you go down there. But what we find is all these black shadows with these round heads on. And we got five angles of them. We got people in the thermal images walking in front of them, not breaking the shadows. So the shadows are behind the people, and there's absolutely zero explanation to it. It truly is a paranormal event. It's overwhelming, and we call it like a haunted nest. We have no idea why there's so many. We've been told there's a lot of diphtheria death down there. There's a lot of child drownings in that river. There's about 50 a year that go down in there. But like you said, there was a lot of deaths in the olden days in the 18th century in those woods.
Yeah.
It's on Indian burial grounds. It's everywhere. It's Indian burial grounds right there. And we couldn't spend any more time that we did in there, but we went down there and we caught that, and then obviously at the end of a 10-day investigation, we had to leave. But that is on the finale of Children of the Grave, of some of the most compelling, thought-provoking evidence I've ever seen in my life.
Okay, I got something else I want to tell you, too, that there is actually, you have a female on your team. Does she respond by saying, for some reason, she understands everything there, but she has this feeling she's been there before?
We did that at Pythian Castle. We had a few sensitives. On the team that we went down there, there was a few people saying that. I do not remember if it was male or female. It got pretty scattered and pretty scary. You got to understand, it was like, you know, a team of 10 people. It's late at night, people rocking, and it just got really scary. But it wasn't like imagination playing your mind. We're using very scientific equipment, meaning that what you get back is fact. It's not just people's imagination. We did use sensitives, and they kept saying that there is something that's bad out here. There is something that is dark. It's like it's been here before.
Yeah.
You know, it's that kind of situation. One thing I think you'd really appreciate, which I am very proud of, is in the Pythian Castle segment, which is the second episode inside Children. Children of the Grave is like three episodes of, like a trilogy of terror. It's kind of cool. And the second thing that we go is to Pythian Castle. It used to be an orphanage in 1903.
How long is the program on your...
90 minutes.
On your DVD?
90 minutes.
90 minutes. So,
yeah.
Okay.
But we brought in child sensitive.
Now, you have more than one DVD out, don't you?
We have two out right now. We have Spooked, The Ghost of Wayville Sanatorium, which was out last year, which has done really well. That was on Sci-Fi Channel. We have the new one, which was released on October 15th, which is available online at childrenofthegrave.com. And it's going on Sci-Fi Television in here and the Space Channel. We were just on the Space Channel in Canada, actually, with Spooked. It's going on the Space Channel and Sci-Fi next year, Children of the Grave. And we have a third one, which is The Possessed, which is about the first documented possessions of children in America, it's an incredible story. It's a very touching story. All our stories are somewhat touching and beautiful, as well as scary.
Yeah.
I like to say that it scares you, but it ends very hopeful. I am not scared of them, but I sometimes, get set back. Because it's too much to believe in. It's like, now you know that they're there, what are you going to do about it?
Well, here's something else I want to ask you, and that is, I was watching a part of the part of your promo regarding one of the sites or one of the investigations you've done, and somebody said there was over 65,000 people who died in this one particular hospital?
That was the sanatorium. There was over, actually, 63,000. People were taken through the death tunnel. That was basically everybody that had tuberculosis that died had to go through a process of, burn.
So did you know that they said that they died or they're actually dying through the death tunnel?
No, they were pretty much dead when they went through the death tunnel as a concept. But, you know, when people are dying and desperation kicks in and you have an epidemic on your hands,
yeah.
It's no difference than a concentration camp. It's like get rid of them quick because we don't know what to do. All we know is we don't want our healthy ones to die too. So, you know, you can bet that there was a few mistakes there, I'm sure. But, the stuff that we got out was far more. We got people, children that were raped in those tunnels, nurses that were attacked, doctors that murdered people, patients that murdered people inside that tunnel. It became a satanic place for the obviously the gangs after the hospital was closed down. It was an old folks' home.
So how long is the tunnel?
I'm sorry?
How long is the tunnel?
500 feet. It goes straight down to the bottom where there was a railroad car to take the bodies away. It's 500 feet down.
500 feet down. Wow. Yeah. So did they roll them down like...
They had a railroad system, like a cart, like a typical mine where they would put them in a cart and rail them down one side. On the other side, there were steps where the doctors would walk down with them, or the workers would walk up to work in the morning because it was cold. But on the other side was like a... They would pull the food up, you know, because it was like a big... Get the food up to the hospital. They would take the bodies down, the food up.
Okay. Now, did they ever say where they took the bodies to after they left the place?
Yeah, they took them onto trains and they disposed of them, or they burned them at the bottom in the morgue. There was two morgues. There was one inside the hospital and one at the end side of the tunnel by the water plant. And they would burn all the clothes. They would get rid of all the fluids so that it was contamination. And then they would dispose of the bodies, and if nobody claimed the bodies, who knows where they took them. They put them in boxes and took them somewhere.
What year did this plague actually take place in that area?
Tuberculosis was started in Canada. You guys had one of the worst tuberculosis back then.
Yeah, we had up in eastern Canada.
Yeah, really bad. And actually, yeah, I think it was even worse than it was on this side, but Kentucky was a swamp. So the air was all the disease was airbound.
Yeah.
And all these... sanatoriums were built like bat wings so that the air was supposed to flow through. This is kind of ironic. You got a disease that is airborne, but you build a sanatorium that is built to put air in there so you get fresh air, which means you blow all the air around, which is bizarre to me. But it was supposed to be what they thought would cure, which they were totally wrong. They had people living out on the sun deck for years. They couldn't come inside. They figured sunlight and air would help them, but they ended up dying. They would only feed them chocolate. They figured sugar would help. They would do all kinds of things that seem barbaric now, but they just didn't know what was fixing them. They would cut everybody's ribs out. You know, every time you needed to breathe, your lungs expanded. They cut your ribs out. You know, people with no ribs and all.
They would cut out about three or four ribs.
That's correct.
Your chest to make sure you can breathe.
Right. So basically, they all went down this tunnel, and you know, it's incredible. So. It was just a terrible epidemic. It lasted till, I believe, and my notes have gotten a little older since this project, but it's I think it was 1949 they actually figured there was a streptomycin, which is what cured TB, and after that the hospitals didn't need to sanatoriums anymore because that it became an outpatient thing. It became a pill form after that. But streptomycin cured it. So after that, it was just like between 1901 and 1949. So basically, it increased right up to that until they find that cure. You started out with two or three people in a sanatorium until you got like thousands in the same group.
I think we lost about triple the amount that you have, you had dealt with, the 65,000. I think we have about triple the amount on top of that, amount of people that passed away in the eastern part of Canada. We really had a bad set of it, TB.
Yes, you did. Well, Trudeau was... One of the Trudeaus, obviously, was the developer of the first sanatorium, and he helped get the sanatorium together. With basically what sanatorium meant, though, really was quarantine.
Yeah.
It was mean a place where, go, knock, knock, you're sick, come with us, we're taking you away. Don't make anybody else sick. They would come and take you away, put them up there, and then, of course, all they wanted was a cure. All they wanted was a cure. They were forgotten. They hoped for a cure, and, of course, a lot of them... They never got cured. They died. And it was a tragic thing. And that place, Wavell Sanatorium, is probably one of the most haunted places in the world. It already is, obviously, in America, but it truly... We spent a long time there. You know, we spent probably about, off and on, 2 months there, 18 hours a day. We filmed a movie there, we filmed a documentary there, and we returned to it several times. And
did you use any of the... backgrounds regarding that, and even though the place was actually quite, say, paranormal activity, did you use them in making any movies in there besides just paranormal investigating? Did you include that in?
Well, no. Like I said, in our movie, we picked up a lot of paranormal activity in the motion picture that Sony had bought, which was called Death Tunnel, which is available everywhere. And there is paranormal activity in that movie. There were shadows walking across the camera, you know, all that kind of stuff, odd sounds and all that. But Spooked, it truly is a celebration of people that were put in that place and were forgotten, and we tell the story that they were there in hopes that they were not forgotten. There were too many people that died there. It was a sad place.
Yeah.
It was very similar to a concentration camp, except the fact they were trying to help, but it did get crazy. Like any place gets crazy, and it gets underfunded, and it becomes, there's always that wicked chap in a, you know, in a hostel that does wicked things because they want to be cooler, they want to become famous for, you know, he did private surgeries on people trying to come up with cures, you know. Of course, they won't tell anybody because, hey, these people volunteered because they get free service, and if it worked for them, they get to go back and sneak in society without anybody even knowing they had a disease.
Right.
I mean, TB was like AIDS. And it's TB is still around today. And if you have TB, nobody wants to touch you or talk to you. So these people were walking around with TB, and they wouldn't sell them houses. They wouldn't, you know, they had to have their own. They had to stay on a farm. They had to have their own. They had food that had to be brought in. Entertainment had to be brought in. They were just damned.
Yeah. Now, anybody who wants to phone in, please call. We do have the lines open for you want to ask questions from Chris Booth. He would love to answer your questions if you have any questions you want to ask. If you ever want to go check the website that he has investigated, and that's actually thechildrenofgrave.com and spook.com.
No, spook.org, actually.
Sorry, .org.
Yeah.
Okay, take that back.
That's okay. Tom was taken at the time.
Someone must have stole your spook.com. Anyways, you can look up the program and give us a call. And the numbers, toll-free numbers, are 877-876-5227. If you want to make any comments, 877-876-5227. That's in the U.S. In Canada, toll-free numbers in Canada is 888-815. That's 9756. 888-815-9756. And those international call lines, please 530-876-3222. That's 530-876-3222. Chris, also one more thing. I'd like to welcome everybody else that are in the chat room. If you guys have any questions you want to ask, please ask questions, because we do have two chat rooms here. We've got BBS chat room. We've got the Pal Talk chat room. That's open. Anybody who wants to ask a question. Also, now, Chris, I got a question to ask you, my friend.
Yeah.
You had done, or somebody had the sight of an apparition, a little girl with no eyes on the third floor.
On the third floor, yeah.
Okay, now, they didn't see her eyes. Is there actually a photograph of that or a video?
Yes, there is. A person had sent a picture to Keith Age of the Louisville Ghost Hunters, who actually turned us on to the picture. She actually became a very good friend of mine. She's an Indian, which is really great. An Indian native, very much into that stuff, which is beautiful. She lives in Florida now. Her name's Kathy Gales. She's still one of our close friends. Me and her did a lot of, like, connection after this. We became very close over this. She sent a picture in, and what she was doing is she had went on a tour. They have tours there, of course.
Yeah.
And when she'd gotten out of the car, she looked up at the window, and she felt she was being stared at. When she turned back to her daughter's nose was bleeding. And she freaked out. When she turned back out, she snapped this picture, and the picture was of this girl looking out the window, and she appears to have no eyes. And that's in the show. And it's funny because the picture I told you about earlier, about when I was in the death tunnel, and I had taken a picture, recorded sound, and felt a terrible feeling of desperation and sadness, almost like somebody was being murdered. I had taken a photograph, and that was also a picture of a girl that had no eyes. But the very interesting thing is when you turned it upside down. It was a girl, clearly a profile of a girl with no eyes right in front of you. I mean, you just couldn't, you know, it's obviously what it is. When you turn it upside down, though, it actually develops three figures in monk-type robes, almost like a satanic cult. And there's faces of like African-American princesses. Like some kind of a voodoo satanic thing. And it is so scary because it's so clear either way you put it that
it
just blows you away.
Yeah, it sounds to me that she was stuck in a vortex or some sort of a, like an area that she wants to break through to see the light, and there's something that's holding her there.
Well, as I understood it, exactly. And what had happened is apparently people were sacrificed in that tunnel when it became a satanic situation, and people were murdered. And it was all just a mix-match of a lot of bad feelings, a lot of, like, desperation already starting, and then satanic thrown on the top, opening doors and confusing the whole issue, and then investigators trying to figure out what happened down there. You know,
possibly they may have cut it. So whoever did this satanic worshiping, possible they could have actually cut her eyes out during the sacrifice.
They could have. There was a documented case of the police had found a man all chopped up, and his dog was all chopped up. He was thrown down the elevator shaft. He was a homeless guy. He had raped a girl, apparently, inside the hospital. And the family came back of that girl, and they totally destroyed him. I mean, cut him up and threw him down in pieces. And it was a police report where they shut that sanitarium down for a while. That actually is in our show, and actually Taps is touching on that, too. I think they're actually Waverly Hills Live on Halloween night, the Ghost Hunters show.
They're doing Waverly Hills Live?
Yeah, a nine-hour investigation on Halloween night is coming up on Sci-Fi Channel.
On the Sci-Fi Channel.
Yep, and the thing is that here in America, and the thing is that what our show really touches, as all our shows touches, is the history behind the haunting.
Yeah.
You know, why it would be haunted. Everybody knows that the place is haunted, but why? Why would it be haunted?
Yeah.
And we're proud of that because we spend a lot of research and development trying to find out what really happened there. You know, and you listen to a lot of local legends and a lot of people tell you stories, and that's where you start and try to see if there's any truth to any of them.
Well, you guys, you know, do you realize that what you found regarding these paranormal investigations in these particular places, you've actually opened up even more doors now for more paranormal investigators to really look into it, being more serious, saying, you know what, there is paranormal activity. And no skeptic can turn around and say, oh, it's not real, it's not real.
Well, they have a tendency of saying it's like, for instance, we had gotten really great reviews on Children of the Grave, but there was one person who said, oh, that picture you showed me, that is a fake picture. I told you about the picture of the Shadow Children. Well, you know, like I told you, it's a great photograph, and I can't tell you if it's real or not. I never took it, but we did thoroughly go through the photos, see if it was photoshopped, blew it up to see if it was put in, blurred out, whatever. We do a lot of our own graphics. We're very good at graphics, but there was no sign of tempering. It was on the negatives, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. So, you know, we weren't saying they were real or fake. So how we proved that is we just went down and did it ourselves.
Yeah.
And I tell you, with a thermal imager, you can't lie. It's a live thermal imager. You pan it. It shows something. Nobody's editing in something or putting something in. Then you see somebody walk across a thermal imager, a mortal that has... that it's warm because it's white, but the thermal imager showing black is completely cold, completely dead. And there were like 12 of these Shadow Children standing behind this guy with a microphone who's recording EVPs. And some of the EVPs are like, you know, some of them are overwhelmingly like, let me die. You know, words like that. Or the ones that really bothered us and bothered the Paranormal Task Force, which were a great team of investigators. They treat it very much like a military operation, but with respect. They're very serious, very serious. It's like a mission operation is to help people, to help things. That's what they do. They help people. That's all they're there to do. They don't joke. They're there, and they get out. Okay? And what they did is they got the most strangest DVDs, like stuff that says, you know too much. You know too much. And I started to think, well, you know, some of these shadows, you know, they're ghostly, but, you know, you could be touching on an alien vortex here or a paradigm world or some kind of a frame in between frame of a tragic event that is still there, that is still lingering, you know, that is still caught in some kind of a world. There is something there that this machine had captured that you cannot see in any way, and sometimes very rare to catch by photography, but thermal imager caught it frame by frame. It was so harsh on our thermal imager that it flashed completely red. It threw our cameras out of sync, then the batteries died right when that had happened.
But you went through a lot of batteries.
We did. We went through a lot of things, actually. It was pretty crazy, and just to be down there alone amongst the coyotes.
What about your equipment? I mean, had a lot of your equipment shut down... that shouldn't have? Like, did you really have any difficulties with replacing anything or anything get damaged while you're doing your investigating?
Well, everything turned off. You know, basically everything would turn off and turn back on. The stolen images, which it never does, flips. It flips completely red. Red means high energy. It means red hot. If you know what a stolen imager, it's different than a FLIR. This was not in color, but it was black. White is normal temperature. Black is cold. Red is hot or extreme energy. Mm-hmm. What had happened, we experienced human beings walking around completely white, meaning the normal temperature. Shadows being something extremely cold is extremely black. When it hits red, it means like fire. Firefighters use it. It means energy. It means heat. It means fire. What had happened every time before we caught these shadow children is the stolen image would display completely red and then shut back down.
Yeah. They try to use their energy to come forward to spend that just a few seconds or a few minutes with you, let you know that they're there, because they really intently want everyone to know this. And I myself, I consider it a huge privilege when a spirit wants to make itself present.
Well, I agree, too, and I think that, like, we had gone to a lot of ghost hunts at Waverly, there's a lot of skeptics out there, more skeptics than there are believers, which is fine, because I like to think that there was an old saying, that I don't know if you're Qawwali singing, Nasra Ali Khan, one of the greatest Qawwali singers, right, says one thing, it takes two people, it takes a gift from God to be able to sing like this,
mm-hmm.
and it's a gift from God to really like the singing. You see? And basically, everybody's going to say now, I love that singing because I want to believe I got a gift from God. Well, the thing is, it's the same way. I don't think that the ghosts and spirits want to let themselves be known to everybody. They find the right people to try to get through. That's what I think. They believe they can read your karma, they can read your intentions, your good vibes, and they get through. And that's, we've always been very lucky. We just go down as sensitive filmmakers. We film you guys. We would film you, okay, doing your thing.
Yeah.
We aren't the stars. We go down and film you doing your thing. And hopefully we get a good show to, you know, show the world. And for some reason, we always capture the most bizarre stuff. But meanwhile, Philip and I are just going like, whoa, I can't breathe. I can't think. Wow, this is crazy. There's something going on here. This is weird. I don't feel right. This is uneasy. There's something wrong here, you know? All that kind of stuff would happen to us, and obviously we would start capturing things.
Well, that's the best part of it all. When you start, when you're able to capture, an apparition or even EVPs. Some of you out there don't know what EVP is, electronic voice phenomena. That's recorded on digital recorders. Sometimes people use common recorders. Now, I find common recorders also do just as good a job because it actually has a bit of electromagnetic pull to it. And it does create more, I guess to say, more tension, because you will get once in a while spirit trying to come through to say, here I am, look at me. And did you use common recorders besides just digitals as well?
We used every kind of recorder you could possibly, an analog, digital, as well as we have recorders on the HD cameras. We had five cameras running around. We had analog tape recorders. We had digital recorders with big microphone setups, plugged in little recorders. Everything, just to walk it going on all the time. We would have basically five points of view to see if something really happened. Of course, you know, it's very rare that, you know, that people don't talk over when you get the great CVP, you know, because it seems like they know how to mask it. When they talk to you, they either know how to mask it or they utilize your energy of speaking to speak. Because I find, you know, you understand how we sat and edited this puppy for like, God, it has been 7 months. So we're listening to headphones to everything that's going on. And you start going like, oh, God, I'm tired. I just want to get this done. And then, you know, you just start going through it. You start hearing all kinds of weird stuff. You're going like, well, that was, no one said that. Nobody did that. Why is somebody screaming? Well, that's weird. Why did somebody scream right here? Well, that, you know, you start finding all this stuff, and then you start recognizing it. And I started realizing that one of the things that happened was they would mimic you or almost tell you what to say.
Yeah,
maybe you would understand this, but I found, and maybe I'm completely off track, but what I found, and I thought it was an interphase problem of a microphone, but I would think that would happen after the thought and not before, but what would happen is you would hear some kind of rhythmic, murmur like, la-da-da-da, you know, whatever it would be, And then right after that, you'd have somebody say, well, let's go out. You know, you would have somebody repeat the same kind of feeling and same kind of vibe. And this weird sound would be trying to tell you or hint to you what to do or where to go. And that was very confusing to me because, like, there was this weird, they would be sounding like slow motion. Never heard any, I have to tell you, my whole thing, never heard any reversed ones. But always slow ones, very slow down, like, let me die. You know, really slow. Like, why would anybody say that, you know, in that kind of tone? We don't have kids on our set, you know, where people are just fooling around. This is very serious. And it's like, that's when it gets really scary. And the scariest one of all, I think, is when we're at Pythian Castle. And we went in a tunnel. There's a tunnel at Pythian Castle as well, where the orphans used to go to do the laundry when it was winter time. And there was apparently, we didn't find that. We found this out after the sensitives found out. The sensitives told us there was somebody in the tunnel that molested children. And then after that, the owner admitted that there was a gentleman that was accused of attacking the children. And he was known to be in the basement. So these guys were dead on. So guess what? We went in the tunnel. So meanwhile, we recorded the tunnel. We started getting the interaction by rapping sounds, which sounds silly, but it really happened, of the big bangs on the pipes. We would ask, were you an orphan here? You know, are you a big man? Bang, the pipe would bang. I'm like, oh, God. And he goes, like, did you kill the children? Bang. How many children? Bang, bang. And I go, like, this is it. You know? And at the same time, what really freaked us out while we were there, because when we were upstairs in the tower room of the orphanage, when she was telling us a story about the guy was in the basement, she was about to tell his name. And as she was going to say his name, our motion detectors all went off. He said his name was, and all the motion detectors went on. Right then. And then in the motion detectors, you hear an EVP, that is somebody screaming in purgatory, saying, you bastards.
Arch.
And I went, oh, my God. And it's like a scream, like just a purgatory scream. You know, it's like nobody's screaming. You know, it's like nobody's doing this.
They were letting you know they were upset.
Yeah, they were really pissed. And he did that when she was going to tell his name. And so there's a lot of freaky stuff that it just brings chills to your knowing that it's out there now and you know it's there. You know, it's crazy.
Yeah. Well, Chris, we're coming to a closing, and I would like to thank you for coming on our show.
Anytime. My pleasure.
And I'm going to get you back on here. Got more to talk about.
Yeah.
But right now, folks, to let everybody else know, Chris does have these videos available, and you could actually go to the website, childrenofthegrave.com and spooked.org. If you want to ask any questions, give Chris a call. You can email them. And they would love to answer your questions for you. And Chris, it's been absolutely fabulous having you on our show.
I wanted to say that I checked you guys out, and I loved your website, and I love your Buddha, okay? I'm very much into Buddha here, and I actually approach our investigations in that direction of energy, and I also love the music that you've got on it.
Oh, I have Theda Miller. She's quite fabulous.
Oh, I love her. I wanted to actually use our music in the show. She is great. She's just wonderful.
You ever want to use her music on your show, you should go to her website, thetamiller.com.
Yes.
And she'll be willing to travel anywhere for you to, like she does her own CDs for her music. So.
Yeah, she's really great, and you guys are very, what we're thinking about doing about this, we're thinking about doing a show on Native American spirits.
Well, hey.
I'm really looking forward to doing that one because I'm very much in, you know, I lived in Canada for a while, I don't know if you knew that, I lived in Vancouver for a long time.
Oh, hey, well, then we're pretty close to cousins.
Yeah, I was in a big rock and roll band at the time, and I was down in Canada doing my thing there, so.
Cool. So. Okay, Chris, I appreciate it. Stay online with me. Thank you, folks, for listening in. This is Derek White, Sky Cloud. We're closing, and we'll talk to you folks next week. In the meantime, between time, that's it for Between Two Worlds. Take care, folks. Evening's Tuesday. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Be safe.
Schau mich an, spür meine Tränen. Schau mich an, verborgen und leer. Komm, sei. Kann mich nicht schämen, dass ich dich noch stets begehr. Schau mich an, du bestimmst das Ende. Schau mich an, stehst in der Tür und geh nicht fort. Reich mir die Hände, dass ich dich noch einmal spür. Kannst du mir verzeihen? Ich kann nur bereuen, denn ich weiß, ja, ich weiß, ich tat dir weh. Was heißt Schuld? Was heißt falsch? Ein Moment, der alles verkehrt. Ein Augenblick, ganz ohne Wert, zerstört mein Glück. Wie soll ich es dir erklären? Ich schau dich an, du hast gelitten. Ich schau dich an, dein Blick ist grau. Dreh dich nicht fort, kann dich nur bitten, dass du mir nochmal vertraust. Ich kann nur bereuen, denn ich weiß, ja, ich weiß, ich tat dir weh. Was heißt Schuld? Was heißt falsch? Ein Moment, der alles verkehrt. Ein Augenblick, ganz ohne Wert, zerstört mein Glück. Wie soll ich es dir erklären? Du schließt die Tür, gehst deines Weges, schließt die Tür, lässt mich zurück. Diese Tür trennt unsere Leben, diese Tür